Good afternoon. I'm Pat Moore. I'll be your guest host today on Juno Afternoon. We'll be talking this afternoon with Alaska writer laureate Peggy Schumacher about her Evening at Egan presentation tonight and her writer's workshop in Juno tomorrow. We'll also get details on 350 Day at UAS with Keenan Bowsler. James Wyckoff will be here with details of the upcoming community garage sale. And we'll have Wayne Hickson and Jerry Prindle in to tell us about the opening of community schools offerings on Monday. All that today on Juno Afternoon. The weather for the evening tonight will be rain with lows around 44. We expect southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. The showers will continue tomorrow with highs around 50. Southwest winds, southeast winds 10 miles per hour.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, the former executive director of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission in Barrow has been charged with embezzling nearly $500,000 from the organization. Lori Townsend has more.
Maggie Amawak was executive director of AEWC from 1990 until 2007. According to the indictment released Thursday, she began stealing from the organization in 2004. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ani Stewart says Amawak issued checks to herself, took bonuses, and stole money for gambling trips.
And she used the Whaling Commission credit card for her own purchases of groceries, meals, airline tickets, cash advances, retail items, paying her utility bills.
Stewart says staff within AEWC alerted federal authorities with concerns about financial malfeasance. In June, another former executive director, Teresa Judkins, was also charged with stealing from the organization. A court date for that trial is set for March of next year. Johnny Aiken is the current executive director of AEWC.
This is a pretty sad day for community in AEWC. And I just want to make it clear that this news does not reflect who we are as an organization or as a community.
Aiken says AEWC now has an independent accounting and auditing company. The organization receives hundreds of thousands of dollars in funding each year from the Department of Commerce. It also receives funding from the North Slope Borough. This year, that amount was $750,000. For National Native News, I'm Lori Townsend in Anchorage.
In Colorado, memorial services begin today for former Ute Mountain Ute Chairman Ernest House Sr. He died last weekend in a motorcycle accident near his home in the Four Corners region. KUNC's Kirk Sigler reports.
Ernest House Sr. was a longtime chairman and council member for the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, a small reservation on the Colorado and New Mexico sides of the Four Corners, sandwiched between two national monuments and home to many lands considered sacred to Native people. Colorado's Lieutenant Governor Joe Garcia, who worked alongside House on the state's Commission of Indian Affairs, says his legacy will be lasting in and outside of Indian country.
He really was an advocate, again, not just for his tribe, but for all Native peoples, and so he was really focused on advancement in the areas of health and education and addressing issues like Indian mascot names at colleges and in sports teams. So he did a lot of different things, and he also served his country more broadly in the Army National Guard.
Carol Harvey, a Navajo tribal member and executive secretary of the Colorado Indian Affairs Commission, says Ernest House Sr. will also be remembered as a humble leader.
And he never wanted people to call him Chairman House. He didn't want to be called chairman. He saw himself as really a servant of the people and a member of his tribe. And he wanted his children of the tribe to be proud that they were Utes and proud that they were Native Americans.
A traditional wake is scheduled for today, with funeral services to follow tomorrow on the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation. For National Native News, I'm Kirk Sigler.
California Governor Jerry Brown establishes the position of governor's tribal advisor for his office. The person will serve as a direct link between the governor's office and tribal governments on matters including legislation, policy, and regulation. Brown signed an executive order to establish the position this week while attending a tribal meeting in Sacramento. During this month in 2007, a Tlingit headdress taken from a medicine person's grave more than a century earlier returned home to southeast Alaska. It was repatriated from the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Enderson, Miller, and Munson.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO FM. I'm Pat Moore, the guest host today for Juno Afternoon. And my first guest is a delightful lady, the writer laureate for the state of Alaska, Peggy Shoemaker.
Hello, Pat.
Hi, Peggy. How does one become writer laureate for the state of Alaska?
Well, every 2 years, the Alaska State Council on the Arts puts out a call for nominations. Anybody in the state may nominate a writer. Those nominations go to a committee of writers, and they select the person they wish to have represent writers and writing in the state and also beyond the state.
So when you say represent writers in writing, you have official duties.
Well, each writer gets to define the major project that she or he wishes to work with. But, for example, John Straley worked with at-risk youth, and Nancy Lord had just helped the people in Homer put together the paperwork and the funding for a new library. So she helped libraries around the state. And I've decided that I'd like to help writers find their way toward readers, and so I'm working with the University of Alaska Press to start the Alaska Literary Series, and I'm happy to tell you our first three titles will come out in the spring.
Now, you're also a professor emerita at UAF, right?
Yes, I taught at UAF for many years and retired, and I teach now in a low residency Master of Fine Arts program that's in Tacoma. It's out of Pacific Lutheran.
Teaching
creative writing on the master's level.
How large are your classes?
Actually, it's a very interesting program. Because it's low residency, all of the faculty and students come together for 10 days in August. Then we all go home. And so I have three students working with me for a whole year as apprentices, and it's a marvelous way to work. Imagine the luxury of three students.
Oh, I think I have 17 in one of the sections I'm teaching right now and 14 or 15 in the other.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, three students is really a chance to work very closely.
That's right.
So what kinds of things do you work with them when you work with them?
Well, on the master's level, and this is true in a low residency or a traditional master's program, students come in with their ideas and they hone their craft, but by the time they're done with the master's program, they have a book-length work. And it's generally in fiction, poetry, or nonfiction, but lately there have been some that have been multi-genre, or in one case, a young man did a project called This Is Not a Book, and he created all his characters online, created identities for them, and there are people all over the world corresponding with these made-up people.
It sounds like a fascinating thing, and of course you know this. Do you lurk on the site?
I look sometimes and see what people are doing with his characters, but it's always amusing to me that they exist in one man's mind and they're very real to the folks corresponding with them.
Now, your published work has all been on paper.
That's correct. Well, actually, I have some things that have been published online. There are now very good, high-quality literary magazines that are only online, like Blackbird comes to mind. That's an excellent one. There's one called Brevity, and this man publishes only works of 750 words or fewer, and it's very high quality.
And does that pay as a publication? Or
it counts as a publication in academic circles. In other circles, who cares?
Yeah. And, I just wondered, does it cost money to read Blackbird?
No, it doesn't cost money. You can go and read Blackbird for free. But they're asking at this moment, they just got their 501c3, and they're asking for donations. What's weird is a lot of composition classes were being required to send work to Brevity, and they couldn't keep up. It's a volunteer organization. They couldn't keep up with all these submissions. So they said, you have to send $3 to submit to us. And that cut down the submissions considerably.
What have you been doing since you came? I think you came in the other day, right? You've been here for a few days in Juneau.
We just got here yesterday.
Oh, okay. And yeah, what and have you been doing? You said today you spent some time with some elementary school students.
Yeah, I was just at the Juneau Community Charter School, and I worked with the kids from second grade to eighth grade. And what an amazing, energetic, and rejuvenating thing to hang out with young writers. I found out that one girl has inside her a baby wolf just being born, and one girl said her secret is that there's a volcano in her that's going to blurt. And I just thought, that's pretty great.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
The language is wonderful. One of your poems in your book, Gnawed Bones, talks about uses the contrast between bones and words
right. In
a really wonderful way. That's
the title poem, and it's fascinating that title, Gnawed Bones. Not too many people got excited about it, but my friend Seth chewed up bones. And my friend Seth Kantner said, I love that title. We have a lot of gnawed bones around here. But he's the only one who got really excited.
And he's how come he had a bunch of gnawed bones?
Because he lives above the Arctic Circle and hunts caribou a lot and lives a subsistence lifestyle on the land.
Now, one of the qualifications one of the qualifications for Writer Laureate is serving writers in the state of Alaska.
Correct.
Which you did somehow, I guess, before you were selected. What was that service?
Well, I do several things. In this position, I like to travel around. And, for example, when I'm here in Juneau, I'll not only work with those elementary students, but tomorrow at the library, I'll do a workshop from 9 to noon for community writers, and it's free. I believe there's still space, but you'd have to check with Carol Race at the Juneau Public Library. I'll also be giving a reading at the evening at the Egan tonight at 7. So it's that sort of public contact, talking to people about writing. And you'd be amazed, all over this state, there are people writing in Pelican. There are people writing in the YK Delta. There are people writing in the Aleutians. There are folks writing in Barrow. It's very heartening to know that even in the large towns and in the tiniest settlements, people are finding words to match what they think and feel.
Peggy, I don't think that all of our readers will be familiar with this, the reason that you decided to author the prose book that you came out with recently. But you were involved in a really terrifying accident in Fairbanks. Could you tell us a little about that?
Sure. My husband, Joe Usabelli, and I were riding our bicycles on the bike path in Fairbanks. A kid on a four-wheel ATV, he was on the bike path illegally, came speeding around a blind corner. Joe hit the ATV and flew over it, and I don't have memory of the wreck, so I can't tell you exactly what happened, but I can tell you the result, and that's plenty. I was very badly injured. As a result of that, I couldn't read for a while. And once I knew I was going to breathe off the machine, it was pretty terrifying to think who I might be if I couldn't read anymore. But fortunately, I recovered, and I began, when I could scribble and when I could stay alert long enough, to write just little things. And some were an attempt to figure out what had happened to us, but some were ancestral stories, and some were family stories, and some I don't even know where they came from, but I had all these little things. And I mushed a bunch of them together and said, it's an essay, and that was a delusion. So I sent it off, and a kind editor said to me, I don't think it's an essay. I think it's a book. So I wrote for 3 more years, and it was, in fact, a book.
So in the midst of this story, you actually were discharged at one point from the hospital, went home.
Yes.
And you were with family.
Yes.
And in the middle of your book, you talk about this second chapter of the thing. Could you, can we have a little reading now, since not all of us will be able to get to your reading tonight?
Oh, sure. I should tell you, though, that what you just set up is not the part that you'd have me put, where you'd put my finger in the book. But
there
was a time that I had a double pulmonary embolism, and that's where the title of the book came.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, the book's called Just Breathe Normally. And I went to the hospital, and the tech lined me up in the machine and said, okay, just breathe normally. And I thought, if I could do that, I wouldn't be here. But there's a little part called Breakup that you had mentioned that you might like to hear. Is this how the river feels? To us, the river changes slowly, taking whole seasons to freeze or thaw. But maybe for the river, it feels quick, reckless. Breakup, the ultimate hot flash. The river outside my window, frozen and thawed every year since it was a river. Just days before the first Canada geese arrive, the last few skiers risk their lives on the river. A runner takes the last few laps on ice. A dog stops to bite mushy snow. One day, dark leads reveal where the ice is rotten. Overflow bubbles up, refreezes. The leads widen every afternoon. We wake before daylight when geese gather to take a look, mosey over the ice shores, then drop into frigid water for a swim. In geological time, this isn't even a blink. 2 days later, swans, where we don't expect them. Tundra swans twine necks among snowflakes, vanishing into evening's river. Past breakup, tablecloths of rotten ice nest along the bank. Halfway, swan wings open, then settle in like second thoughts. Maybe they flew north over Minto, traced halos over brooding ponds, saw from far up, without touching, the world is hard and will stay hard a while longer.
Wow. Thank you so much. Your prose is very often poetry.
Yes, it is.
And one of the things I noticed, I looked at both your books, and there's a real flow between the prose book and the collection of poetry, The Gnawed Bones.
Well, thank you. And I should tell you, because I care about how sound contributes to meaning and how those two things are inextricable for me, the prose often, the rhythms in the sentences are just as strong as the rhythms in poems.
So, tonight when you read, is it tonight?
Yes, yeah. Tonight at 7:00.
Tonight when you read, then we'll be able to hear more of these pieces. Okay, Peggy Shoemaker will be reading and talking about her work tonight at the Evening at Egan presentation on the University of Alaska campus. Is it in the library?
It's in the Egan Lecture Hall, it's free and open to everybody.
Okay, good. And it starts at?
7:00.
Thank you very, very much. Oh, and there's a workshop that people may still be able to sign up for.
Can you tell us about that one more time? The downtown Juneau Public Library from 9 to 12. They can check with Carol Race at the downtown library.
9 to 12 tomorrow.
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming
down.
My pleasure. We really appreciate it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 23rd of September, 2011. It's the birthday of the blogger Anna Marie Cox, born in Puerto Rico in 1974, the founding editor of Wonket, a blog about Washington politics, who left the site, she did, in 2006 on publication of her novel Dog Days, the story of a woman who founded a blog about Washington politics. It's the birthday of the poet Yaroslav Seifert, the only Czech to receive the Nobel Prize in Literature, born in a suburb of Prague in 1901, came from a working-class family, became a journalist and a poet, was a devoted communist when the party first formed after World War I, but as a poet, he represented the poetist movement, which believed that art had no function other than art itself. He objected to the Bolshevik sympathies of the Communist Party in Czechoslovakia, for which he was expelled from the Communist Party. And 2 years later, 1950, a collection of his poems expressing his disillusionment with communism was censured. He survived the Nazi occupation, the Stalinist regime, communist oppression, continued writing and collecting cactus plants until he died in 1986. It's the birthday of the author of The Scarlet Pimpernel, the Baroness Emushka Orczy, born at her family's estate in Hungary, 1865, part of the landed nobility, a novel about a swashbuckling Englishman, Sir Percy Blakeney, who helped his aristocratic brethren in France escape during the French Revolution. It's the birthday of the Roman Emperor Caesar Augustus, born in 63 BC, the great nephew of Julius Caesar, who became Caesar's heir upon his assassination. Augustus, widely respected during his reign, he did good works. He started the first police and firefighting services. He distributed funds for soldiers and veterans, restored temples of Roman deities. The month of August is named in his honor. And it's the birthday of the Mongol Emperor Kublai Khan, born somewhere in Mongolia in 1215, who ruled over most of modern-day Mongolia and China. Marco Polo met Kublai Khan when he traveled from Venice to Mongolia and stayed 17 years there, learned the language, served in Kublai Khan's administration. And from Marco Polo's accounts, we know that Kublai Khan fathered 22 sons by his four wives and 25 sons with other women, and presumably many daughters as well. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, Unveiling. In the cemetery, a mile away from where we used to live, my aunts and mother, my father and uncles lie in two long rows, almost the way they used to sit around the long planked table at family dinners. And walking beside the graves today, down one straight path and up the next, I don't feel sad exactly, just left out a bit, as if they kept from me the kind of grown-up secret they used to share back then, something I'm not quite ready yet to learn. Linda Paston's poem Unveiling from Carnival Evening, New and Selected Poems, 1968 to 1998, published by W.W. Norton and Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts, in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Heather McPherson. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for programming on this station is provided by Jesse Keel, candidate for Juneau Assembly District 1, paid for by Keel for Assembly, Harvey Marvin and Margaret Pugh co-chairs, 535 Harris Street, Juneau.
It's 22 minutes after 2. I'm Pat Moore, guest host for Juneau Afternoon. I have with me two folks from the University of Alaska Southeast. They are Kanan Bowsler and Caroline Hayden. And they're going to tell us a little bit about an event that is coming up tomorrow at UAS called 350 Day. 350 what?
350 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere is the number that we're promoting.
And what's magical about 350 parts per million?
Well, 350 parts per million is really the upper limit of parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere that climate scientists have kind of deemed as the safe limit if we want to continue to experience the conditions that we've evolved in over the past 10,000 years that have given us such a stable climate. And so basically everything that we know in our world today evolved within this limit of less than 350 parts per million. It was usually actually at about 275 parts per million, and now we're above that. So this is really a great number to spread to everyone, and it's a very tangible goal to share with policymakers that will allow us to kind of take positive action on climate change.
I read somewhere that we're at 391.7 worldwide. Is that?
Yep, that's.
What does that mean in terms that I might be able to understand? In other words, is part of my life affected by us being 40 parts per million high?
Yeah, I mean, the climate has been changing over the past couple hundred years, especially with this rise in CO2. And climate's a funny thing because it's something that changes slowly. It's on a very large time scale, you know. Humans can experience it, but it happens kind of so slowly that we don't really notice it unless, you know, you think back to when you were way younger, if you've lived in the same place for a very long time. And so it's hard for people to really conceptualize this because we're used to dealing with weather, which is a very present concept, you know, but climate is kind of a longer time scale. So it's certainly changing everything that we know. It's just a process of opening our eyes to it and noticing it, I guess.
Now, this event that you and Caroline are working on together, Caroline, what is planned out at the university in about around 350 Day?
Well, 350 Day is actually an international event where communities worldwide kind of pick their own local event that suits their community. So, for example, I think Indonesia this year, a community there is doing a 350-hour bike ride around the city. So for the Juno chapter event, we've teamed up with the UAS Rec Center. And the theme for this year's 350-day celebration internationally is called Moving Planet Alternative Transportation. So it goes along with a lot of those messages that you've probably been hearing over the past 10 years of how to transition effectively from a fossil fuel-based lifestyle to something different. So this day is all about promoting different ways of moving that don't necessarily involve sitting in your car by yourself listening to the radio. But what's going to happen is tomorrow, on Saturday at 3 o'clock, the community, and especially students, if you're listening, are welcome to join us at the Rec Center. And we're planning an alternative transportation obstacle course to start the day off with. And that's involving bike mazes and scooters and skateboards, maybe a rope swing or two, hula hoops, piggyback rides, backwards walking, kind of creative ways of moving in a different way, just as a representation of trying to think of creative ways to get out of the familiar fossil fuel-driven way of living. And then after that, that's from 3 to 5 at the Rec Center, we're going to have some free food and live music. I'm going to be playing some tunes, as well as Ryan Cortez. You might have seen him playing around town occasionally. And then from 6 to 7, we've invited various organizations in Juneau, including SEAC, the State Transportation, and a UAS faculty member, Aaron Hood, who does a lot of work with glaciology. They're going to give presentations on their work with energy, transportation planning, and climatology research in Southeast, just to give people an idea of what's happening climate-wise and also climate solution-wise in Southeast Alaska.
So now you're cooking the food, of course, without any carbon footprint, right?
We haven't really been able to organize that well on that.
You don't have solar ovens set up out there and you're praying for sun, right?
No, not yet.
So alternative transportation of all kinds. It sounds kind of like a fun event. Now, you said when you introduced that, you said the public is invited. This is not just for UAS students.
Yeah, it's directed, we're trying to emphasize it towards students just to get that demographic really involved in the climate movement. But everyone is welcome. And I did mention that there's going to be maybe things that people aren't comfortable with or familiar with, like skateboarding.
Or walking backwards.
But it's not meant to be like a pro-athlete thing. It's meant to be fun and engaging. And if you don't feel comfortable with something, you don't have to do it. But we really encourage everyone to come out and really push yourself to try to feel like what it feels like to move in a different way.
And have fun.
350 Day is an international event. Mm-hmm. Are you in any way in contact with groups at other places and coordinating with them?
Yeah, actually, basically once you get into this 350 network, which is organized through 350.org is the website if everyone wants to check it out. Once you get into this network, then you're always kind of like communicating with people that are helping you run these events. And in the events just in Alaska, there have been organizers that have been reaching out to help people and kind of make contacts between the different people that are organizing events. So yeah, it's a global movement. You know, everyone is really together on this one. And I guess, yeah, the big idea is to share what we're doing and make sure everyone knows that this event is one in the thousands that are happening around the world.
Mm-hmm. You won't have, like, television from Indonesia or anything like that, though?
We won't, but to give you kind of a tangible idea of what's happened in Alaska with 350 Day, a 350 celebrations have happened for the past 2 years in Juneau, actually. And last year, the organizers collaborated with the Douglas community and started the Douglas Community Garden, which saw their first harvest this year. So good. It's been a good start in Juneau for 350, and I hope you guys can come and join us and be part of it this year.
Wonderful. It starts at 3 o'clock. UAS Rec Center, mm-hmm. which is around on the Back Loop Road.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Off, kind of like, almost you think you're off campus, but it's up there behind the bus barns,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Okay, good. And there's no fee.
No fee.
Okay. And about how long do you think the event will last? What time do you expect the last presentation by Aaron Hood will be over?
Our time frame is starting at 3 and finishing the presentations around 7, and then we're going to have kind of an optional discussion afterwards with the panel of presenters. So that will probably be probably hoping to end everything at 7:30. But everyone's welcome to drop in whenever you can. You don't have to stay for the whole thing. But please be encouraged to drop by whenever you can.
Wonderful. Thank you very, very much for joining us this afternoon.
Great, thank you.
Thanks for having us, Pat.
This song has carried me on its wings for about 25 years now. The letter is but a song we sing. Clears the way to die. You can make a mountain ring, make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, you may not know why. Come on, people, now smile on your brow. Everybody get it together. Driving down one river, right down. Some may come and some may go. People, we will show them.
Programming on this station is provided by Lauren Jones, candidate for Juneau Assembly area-wide. Paid for by Jones for Assembly, Box 240703, Douglas. Chris Ashenbrenner, Chair.
It's 3:34 at KTOO. I'm Pat Moore, guest host today for Juno Afternoon. And my next guest is James Wyckoff, who is here to tell us about an upcoming event where you can sell some of the stuff that's cluttering up your garage and driving you crazy in the middle of your back bedroom. James, what's up?
Well, we got the big community garage sale coming up. Next weekend, 8 days from today, October 1st, that's first Saturday in October, and opens up to the public at 9 o'clock in the morning, goes on to 1 o'clock, and need to be there early because a lot of people sell everything on their table before noon.
So this is at Centennial Hall?
Correct.
Okay, and are you in the big open space?
We're in the ballroom, yeah.
Okay, and so there'll be this big circle of tables?
Yeah.
And someone rents a table from you?
Yes, it costs $20 for, we call it a space. It's a floor space that's 10 feet long, 8 foot deep, and in that space you get a 6 foot table and 2 chairs, and you can organize that space any way you like.
You can make the store any way you'd like it to be.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So what kinds of things do people sell at the community garage sale?
Oh, boy, you name it. I haven't seen any pink elephants there yet, but... There might be one this year.
So what's the weirdest thing you've seen there?
Well, you know, this is the 17th annual, and it's about the 10th that I participated in. This is just the second one I've organized as a host. And I remember one fellow telling me that he bought a baby crib there. The crib was too bulky for the person to actually bring down to the garage sale, so he just had a photograph of it there. And he bought that baby crib from the photograph, went over there, and, you know, it all worked out. It's basically a low-tech, enjoyable, fun 50-family garage sale. And for some people in Juneau, garage selling is a sport. And when they can find a 4 or 5-family garage sale, that's nirvana. Well, here we are. 50, this is super Vernana.
Now, when I read the description of this, people who come to shop do not have to pay to get in.
That's right.
Okay.
Totally free. Okay. Now, we do have a table donated to the local food bank. And for people that want to drop off cans of food, can take almost anything other than outdated baby formula. And all that goes, the food bank will be there. And also, any items that you don't want to goof around with a garage sale, you're not sure just exactly what you want to do with it, you just want to get separated from it somehow, you can drop it off, whether it's an old clock or a bathroom scale or anything that's in the back of the cupboard that you're not using, clothes, whatever. You can drop that off at the food bank table also, and all the proceeds, all the cash proceeds that go from the sales of the things from the food bank table there go directly into the coffers of the food bank to help them out. Anything that's left over in the way of clothing, housewares, that sort of thing, goes to the thrift store over in Hoonah to help those people out. And the local food bank here in Juneau works real closely with the thrift store over in Hoonah. So they arrange all the transportation and everything like that. So it's a kind of a win-win-win situation. People get rid of a lot of stuff. They buy a lot of stuff and put a lot of stuff that keep a lot of stuff out of the landfill.
Now, my experience with garage sales is that the real action in a garage sale happens within the first 15 minutes after the bell rings and it starts. Is that true of this garage sale to your...
It is. The decibel level goes up dramatically at 9 o'clock in the morning when we open up the doors to the public. I don't know if I mentioned that we open up at 6 o'clock for the people that are selling.
Okay.
And it is, of course, depending on the weather outside, sometimes we have a bigger turnout than other words. But the early bird gets the worm at a garage sale. That's when the best deals are still there.
Well, the weather for Saturday is showers with a high around 50 and southeast winds about 10 miles per hour. So we're not going to have a storm to keep people indoors for you, but it sounds like it's going to be a little wet outside. Maybe that'll increase your house a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, if I purchased space from you, it would cost me $20 for this 10-foot-long space.
Right.
And I can set up as early as 6 o'clock in the morning?
Correct. Uh-huh.
Are there any items that I cannot sell at the garage sale?
Whiskey, firearms, obscene things, and homemade food things that have to be inspected by the state DEA food thing, something like that. So things that are cooked at home.
So jams and jellies?
Jams and jellies cannot be sold at this particular event.
Okay,
right.
That's good to know. So jams and jellies, bottle your own root beer or something like that, can't sell that sort of thing at the garage sale.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So when people arrive there, they've got all this stuff in the back of their pickup truck. How do they get it in at 6 o'clock in the morning and to the tables?
Yeah, everything has to come through the door on the parking lot side of the Centennial Hall building. And for people that have dollies, things with wheels on them, we have the ramp there for the handicap ramp so they can roll right up through there. Otherwise, just carry it through. We'll probably just prop the doors wide open there.
So they can't bring things in through those glass doors up front on the little lawn area. It has to be down at the far end? They can't. Okay.
They could, yeah. That's a little bit further around if the weather's nasty.
So that'll be open.
Yeah. All the doors except – they won't be able to use the loading docks on Willoughby Street or the one the north side of the building.
So now, if I had something that wouldn't fit in the 10-foot space, is there a slop-over rule here? Can I edge out of the front of my space a little ways?
Well, you'd have to negotiate with your neighbor. Or you could edge out into the walkway, just come talk to me. And like I say, we try to keep it low-tech and friendly. So
and you'll be set up.
Go ahead.
You'll be set up at the event somehow so people can – you'll be around there.
I'll be there with a big straw hat that says BOSS, B-O-S-S, BOSS.
From 6 in the morning until – when does this thing end?
At 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it's all over.
Okay, and then how long – assume that I have some stuff on my table that didn't sell – we certainly wouldn't want that to happen, but maybe it does. Then how long do I have to clean up after and like that?
Need to be out by 2 o'clock.
Okay, so the public buys everything and goes away at 1, and then I have 5 minutes to sit back and go, whew, and then start cleaning up. I got to be out by 2 o'clock.
Right.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Can families go together and buy a space or groups?
In fact, several groups, I don't think they'd mind me saying, the Grateful Dogs of Juneau, what a great group they are, using those as a fundraiser. And some other local organizations are also using the event as a fundraiser. And it worked out great that way and gives the kids involved a real experience and free enterprise.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like a really marvelous, huge garage sale with, did you say 50 families, rough numbers?
Yeah.
So there's space for 50 tables?
Yeah, 50 approximately spaces. 50. And then some families are taking two tables. Have one family that you can we'll also have option try in effort to keep it friendly. If you just got one or two items and everything, you can buy a half a space, and we'll coordinate that with another person. So for $10, you can share that 8x10 space and 3 feet of the 6-foot-long table with someone else, and we'll coordinate that.
But once more, if you have something and you don't want to sit a booth and all that sort of stuff, you could bring it to the food bank table, and they would sell it, and the profits would be a donation to them, or the funds that they can use.
And that's been fairly successful in the past. Yeah.
James, I think we've probably answered every possible question people could have about this, but just in case someone wants to know if they can sell a particular item or something like that, is there a way you can be reached or someone can be reached to ask those questions?
Call me at my home, and that phone number is 586-6393. And or you can shoot me an email at jameswyckoff@yahoo.com.
And that's with W-Y-C-O-F-F with an E on the end?
No E.
No E.
No K.
W-Y-C-O-F-F. Okay.
Correct.
The spelling of the last name. Okay, wonderful.
I'm the only Wyckoff in the phone book.
Okay, good. Well, listen, thank you very, very much for coming down and telling us about this event. My wife and I are thinking seriously about maybe seeing you there as sellers.
Okay, sounds
Thanks.
Great.
Go start the car. Better to be early than we'll be the first in line. And you know how I love this. It's amazing what you'll find. Going through the dead people's houses. Wonderful.
It's 3:47. You're in tune with KTOO-FM. I'm Pat Moore, guest hosting Juno Afternoon today. And my guests here in the studio with me are two folks who are here to talk about the upcoming opening of community schools events. Wayne Hickson, who is the community school supervisor for the Juno School District, and Jerry Prindle, who's going to be teaching a new, newly offered class in amateur radio licensing. Wayne, tell us a little bit about what happens on Monday.
Well, on Monday, we'll begin with our classes for community schools. You can sign up over the phone. You can register over the phone, or if you show up at the class there, there'll be someone there to take some registrations, too. So you can do it at the door or on the phone with community schools.
Now, community schools is not the university. It's not the school system. It's kind of a different thing, right?
This would be more people are – we have – a lot of different classes. We have people who teach stained glass. Obviously, we have someone here that's going to be working with amateur radio classes. We have a pet first aid class. In the past, we also have guitar classes this time. Trying to think of all the ones. And then we have some other other health classes of people to quit smoking, lose weight, emotional freedom. Then we have some arts, and if you're traveling, we have the Hawaiian hula events going on. We have Spanish and flamingo dancing. And then you have sword fighting, too. So there's a range of activities that you could get involved with.
So can you take sword fighting and hula dancing and then combine the two?
In a... At your own peril.
Okay. So how community schools then uses the resources of the school district kind of as an outreach to people who are interested in learning about an activity, is that?
Right, right. What it is that the community schools makes available all the facilities, and so we're really providing classrooms for people to come in and to share their knowledge with other people. And I've participated, I've taken classes in writing and different things too. So
there's a small fee for the use of the
right,
facility.
Right, and it varies with it. Like the stained glass one, I think, is one of the more expensive classes that we have, and that's $108. And then we have some classes that are, let me just take a look here. I get it right. We have for the Spanish arts and flamenco dance is like $5. So, I mean, there's a range, but it doesn't really go over. The highest is that $100 one.
So that $100, though, covers all the materials that you need in order to be able to take the
class.
Well,
there's some of the classes you'll have to buy some other, materials as well. They have a supply fee of 15, so the class fee is 108, and then you have a supply
and
fee of
supply,
15.
Okay.
Yeah, so there is.
But for a little over $100, you can learn to do stained glass.
Yeah, which is pretty marvelous, actually, when you look at it.
And how long does that? How long does the typical community school's offering last?
It goes about 6 weeks or so, I would say. Most of them are and that would be about that ballpark.
And some are shorter, some are longer.
Right. So you have to take a look. We do have the flyer out. And then there's some online courses, too, if you're interested in signing up for some online things.
I think I saw the flyer show up in my mailbox. Was part of the paper? Or
no, it just came on its own because it showed up at my place, too. So, yeah.
So it gets mailed out to everyone?
Yeah, it gets mailed out to everyone.
And if somebody took all the stuff out of the mailbox that day and said, this is all ads, and threw it away, where would they get a copy of the flyer if they were interested?
Well, you would you have to come to community school's office for the flyer. I think that's where we have most of them at right now, and that's at Glacier Valley. You probably can go online, too, and look under community schools for info. Just call
780-1410, I think.
Yeah, 1410 is my number, and 2073 would be Debbie's, and she would have information as well.
Debbie Lowenthal.
Debbie Lowenthal. She's the one who organizes all this and has done a marvelous job with it.
So one of the organization things that she did this time was to help the Juno Amateur Radio Club put together an offering through community schools. Jerry, can you tell us a little bit about what's going to go on with that? I think you start Monday night, right?
We're
going
to start Monday night, I think, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. We will be teaching the first of the three licenses that amateur radio offers, which is the sort of the entry level. And what we'll be doing is exploring radio, what constitutes radio, and how it's put together. We're not going to go real deep into theory or anything like that. So it's really designed for the folks that have no previous experience at all in radio or any other electronics. And it gives them a good foundation for all kinds of electrical and electronic radio and related things.
Jerry, why would somebody want to take this class?
Well, several reasons. Number one, it gives you an alternative for communications. If we have an emergency, for instance, and the telephone system goes down, for instance, then the cellular system goes down, which it can. I mean, there's nothing that's foolproof these days. This gives us another way of communicating. Both among the amateur radios in an emergency situation, you have communications, which is a real important thing.
I think it's also a hobby, right?
Oh, boy, is it ever. It's a great hobby. It really is.
And you're a ham radio operator.
Absolutely.
How long have you been a ham radio operator?
I got my first license in 1958, so that was a while back.
What kinds of things have you done with your radio license?
Well, let's see. We started out with code, of course, on CW. By the way, we are not teaching code, nor is it required for any license now. This is something fairly new. The amateur fraternity rather fought against this for a long, long time because CW, or Morse code, is how amateur radio started. That's where it first began before somebody invented a way of sending voice over the air. So it took a long time to get rid of that. Not that it's gone by any means. It certainly isn't. There's a lot of operators out there that enjoy CW more than they do anything else. So most popular nowadays, of course, is voice or phone, as we call it. So that's what you can do with a technician license. It's primarily phone on what we call the VHF frequencies.
That technician, that's the entry-level license that you're going to be teaching.
Uh-huh.
How long does your class last?
The class lasts until October 15th. We'll be meeting three times a week, on Mondays and Thursdays, I believe, or is it Wednesday?
Thursdays.
Monday and Thursday. And then on Saturday, we're going to meet from 9 to 1 at the NOAA weather station on the Back Loop Road. And the reason we're going to do that is we have a station set up out there. So we can do some demonstrations.
An amateur radio station.
Yeah, an amateur radio station already set up out there. The NOAA folks, the weather folks, are very interested in alternative communication also for their reasons if something happens to the communication system. So they've welcomed us with open arms.
The Juno Amateur Radio Club and these classes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. And we hold our meetings out there in their conference room also. We're very happy to have them let us do our meetings out there. It's been very nice.
Wayne, the contact information that you gave us at one point there, if people are interested in enrolling in a class, I know that you can enroll in some of the classes over at the expo that's going on over in Centennial Hall today. I know particularly Jerry has had forms on his table for the Amateur Radio Club for people that wanted to join that class. So otherwise, they contact you or they can go online. Do you happen to remember the name or what that website, how you get to that website?
Well, it would be junoschools.org.
Okay, so junoschools.org. And then,
you're looking for community schools is what you want.
Okay, and then click on community schools, and that will get you down to someplace where you can find out. Okay.
Yeah, and if you're having problems with that, just give me a ring or give Debbie a ring. We'll help you out.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming down. I hope you have good success with your students, and I hope your classes go well for you.
Thank you.
Afternoon on Juno Afternoon, Jeff will be talking with Amy Skilbred and Zoe Morrison about Juno's Climate Action Plan. Amy Gulick will be in here to give us a preview of her presentation tonight, highlighting her book, Salmon in the Trees. We'll be talking with Pua Moanu about visiting local artists in their studios, and Tom Matisse will come in to review lessons learned during the Disaster Preparedness Expo going on in the Convention Center today. Tomorrow at 3 on KTOFM. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, you can tune to K276 AF at 103.1 MHz. In Lemon and Slitzer Creek, you can listen to K269 AO. They're at 101.7 MHz. Our signal is relayed at 88.1 MHz to Gustavus on K201 AM. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 MHz. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS. They're at 89.9 MHz. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau.